Let the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Well, this Epiphany season, we're looking at these passages from 1 Corinthians, asking the question, what does it look like for Jesus to be manifest in our midst, in this space, in this time? And last week, we saw that the gospel message was not being completely embraced by the Christians in Corinth. In fact, the Christians in Corinth were divided. They were broken up into factions, and they were aligning themselves with certain Christian leaders, Paul and Peter and Apollos, and they were at odds with one another. They were in conflict with one another. And Paul told these believers that what they were doing was wrong. In fact, he said that they had not really experienced and not really understood the nature of the gospel, because if they had, then those divisions that they were so proud of would not be the case. So he goes on in the passage today, which is 1 Corinthians 1, verses 18 to 31, and he unfolds and explains a little bit more about the counterintuitive nature of the gospel. It's counterintuitive, and yet, when we really understand and appreciate the nature of the gospel, the nature of Paul's proclamation, then we begin to understand just how true and good and beautiful it actually is. And so Paul says that the gospel, the word about the gospel, the word about the cross specifically, is foolishness to the world. So when Paul and the early Christians announced Christ crucified, that was understood by many around them as foolishness. But Paul says this is true because even in the Old Testament, in the prophet Isaiah, God said, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise. Now, it's interesting. That's a quotation from Isaiah chapter 29. And the historical context of Isaiah 29 is important in this case, because at that time in the 8th century BC, the Assyrian Empire was threatening the southern kingdom of Judah, where Isaiah was in Jerusalem. And through Isaiah, God was promising the people of Jerusalem, stand firm, hold fast, I'm going to protect you, I'm going to save you, don't worry, it's okay. And the leaders in Jerusalem said, okay, that sounds like the kind of message that we want to hear, but I think that if we made an alliance with the Egyptians, that would cover our bets a little bit more. And I know that the Egyptians, not really for us, not really on our side, but if we paid them, if we ceded a little bit of our sovereignty to them, then they might protect us. And Isaiah says, God says, don't do that. Trust me. Hang in there. Believe. Have faith. Trust me. You'll be okay. And they said, we're going to go with the Egyptians. And so God, through the prophet Isaiah, says, this is human wisdom. You're making a calculation. The Egyptians will keep me safe. God is promising something different. This is human wisdom, Isaiah is saying. And God is saying, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise. Your human calculations that led you to make an alliance with the Egyptians, who don't really have your best interests at heart, will actually be proved disastrous for you. I called you to trust me, God says to his people. You're making a mistake. And so it is with this message that Paul is announcing about a crucified Messiah. Paul's basic announcement was Christ crucified. Christ is the Greek word Christos for the Hebrew word Messiah. And to a Jewish listener, a crucified Messiah is an oxymoron. Jews know what a Messiah is, and they know what a crucifixion is. They don't go together. The Messiah is the one who comes and vindicates Israel. The Messiah is strong, is mighty, he has an army, and he kills people. and he vindicates us. The Messiah does not get crucified. And so when Paul comes and announces to the Jewish community, the Messiah has come and he's been crucified, they say, that's a scandal. How dare you speak about the Messiah like that? It doesn't make sense. Human wisdom will not lead you to the place where you figure out a crucified Messiah. Human wisdom leads you to the place where you figure out a strong, powerful, military, political leader to save you from your enemies. That's where human wisdom gets you. Human wisdom does not get you to a crucified Messiah, and a crucified Messiah is a scandal. So it's a scandal to the Jewish community to hear Christ crucified. But what about the Greeks? The city of Corinth is very cosmopolitan. There's a vibrant Jewish community there, but it's mostly Gentiles. What about the Greeks? Well, to the Greeks, they were seeking sophisticated philosophy. They were about pursuing wisdom in its abstract form. And it's important to understand here that Paul isn't critiquing wisdom in the biblical sense. There's a wisdom tradition within the Old Testament that's very important and central even to the message of God's revelation. So Paul's not critiquing, say, the book of Proverbs or Job or Ecclesiastes. In fact, this kind of wisdom is rooted in the revelation of God of himself to the people. What Paul is critiquing is the pursuit of wisdom apart from revelation. A pursuit of wisdom especially, and this was true in Corinth, especially the articulate, eloquent presentation of wisdom. He was critiquing that sort of pursuit of wisdom. And when you, apart from revelation, God's supernatural revelation of himself to humanity, try to figure things out, it will not lead you to a crucified Messiah. This is not something that we would equate a crucified Messiah with common sense. It's not something that comes out in any wisdom tradition, in any religion or philosophy in the history of the world. A crucified Messiah is foolishness to Greeks, to Gentiles. So when Paul makes his announcement, the Messiah has been crucified, the Jewish community says that's a scandal. The Gentiles say that's foolish. Human wisdom cannot get you to the place where you embrace a crucified Messiah. And Paul is critiquing the Christians in Corinth because he believes that they have moved from the place in which they embraced and even celebrated the message of a crucified Messiah. They'd moved somewhere else. They were pursuing wisdom. They were rallying around different teachers. They were dividing them among themselves. And they had moved away from the simple message of Christ crucified. And they were pursuing human wisdom. But then Paul brings it back to the Corinthians' own story. Paul says, look, remember who you are. You all are not a very impressive bunch. Not many of you are wealthy. Not many of you are well-born. Not many of you are successful. But God chose you. God called you. And when you heard this message of a crucified Christ, a crucified Messiah, you embraced it and you celebrated it. And you experienced salvation. Now, why did God choose you? Why did God call you? If you're looking for the strong, influential, military, political leader, you don't qualify. If you're looking for the bright, articulate, intelligent person, you don't qualify. But God chose you. God called you. because the wisdom that God has demonstrated in the crucified Messiah is meant to take the small things, the little things, the foolish things, the things that have been cast down and thrown away, and to raise them up, to show the world that all of its wisdom and all of its strength and all of its power are being brought to nothing through the crucified Messiah, the message of the crucified Messiah. And where does this lead? This leads to the place, and this is Paul's final point in this section, this leads to the place where no one can boast in the presence of God, you see. And so just imagine that the messianic expectation of the Jewish community had come true, and there was a strong, powerful, mighty military political ruler who was going to vindicate them and save them from their enemies. Then in the presence of God, the one who was vindicated could say, God chose me because I'm Jewish. God chose me because I kept the law. God chose me because I was righteous. God judged you, Gentile, because you're wicked. God judged you, Gentile, because you're not chosen. You see. And so in that scenario, in the presence of God, that vindicated person could boast. That vindicated person could boast not of God's work, but his or her own work. Imagine the other scenario, that sophisticated intellectual pursuit, articulate communication of human wisdom might be vindicated before God. We've used our rational and intellectual capacities to figure out the truth about the world. And so in the presence of God, that one could boast. I'm smart. I've got it. I've figured it out. I've grasped it. And you haven't. But a crucified Messiah, a scandal and foolishness, brings us all to the same place in the presence of God. It brings us to the place in the presence of God where we are equally powerless and ignorant in the face of sin, evil, and death. In the face of sin, evil, and death, we are equally powerless and we are equally ignorant. And so the crucified Messiah comes. And because it's the Messiah, he's anointed by God to bring salvation. He is the one who is called to vindicate the righteous and judge the wicked. But because he's crucified, he says, I'm going to identify myself with the wicked. I'm going to take the judgment deserved for the wicked on myself. On the cross, I'm going to endure public shame and humiliation for the sins of all of us. And because of that, he's going to be vindicated by God in the resurrection. He's going to be vindicated because of his goodness, because of his justice, because of his love. And now, the vindicated, crucified Messiah offers himself and offers his life to each one of us. The only thing that's necessary for us to share in the life of the vindicated crucified Messiah is to admit our powerlessness and our ignorance in the face of sin, evil, and death, and to understand that God did something that we couldn't have even dreamt up. No lab at MIT could have come up with this one. No experiment at the Pentagon could have won this one. It's only the God who creates the world out of nothing. It's only the God who passionately desires a love relationship with his creatures. And it's only a God who loves so strongly and so powerfully that he's willing to endure shame and humiliation, the curse of sin, the pain of death, so that in his vindication he can offer life to Jew, to Gentile, to intelligent, to foolish, to strong, to weak alike. We're all alike in the presence of the vindicated, crucified Messiah. The Corinthians had gotten away from that. They had heard the message of Christ crucified and embraced it and experienced salvation. But they got to the point where they said, well, the crucified Messiah is kind of a strange message, and we got that one. Let's move on to what's next. Human wisdom, human strength. And now their community was a total mess. Paul's calling them back. Back to the message of the vindicated, crucified Messiah. Back to the one who's longing to give them life, but life that's beyond human strength, beyond human wisdom. And so as we gather for worship this morning, God has that same longing for each one of us. That to the extent that we have tried to root our identity and root our lives in human strength, we need to come back in the presence of the crucified Messiah. For those of us who have tried to root our life and root our identity in human wisdom, we need to come back to the vindicated, crucified Messiah. Because the truth is that all of us are powerless, all of us are ignorant in the face of sin, evil, and death. And it's God beyond our wildest imaginations who brought forth this plan of a crucified Messiah. And we find in the crucified Messiah the secret, the wisdom, the power. And that's where we need to find our life. That's where we need to find our strength. And that's where we need to find our identity. That vindicated, crucified Messiah is here with us today. And he's longing for us to find ourselves in him. Amen.